welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, March the 16th, 2012. Hope you are having a great day and looking forward to a special St. Patrick's Day weekend. It will be a very windy, dusty, and perhaps wet weekend here, so enjoy today anyway, weather-wise. I am Bill Buckmaster, and we thank you very much for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We are live Monday through Friday at noon on The Voice, KVOI, AM 1030. It is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our voice network stations, KAPR, AM 930 in Douglas, and KJAA, AM 1240. Folks listening in Globe and Gila County. We stream the show live at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com, and we make it very easy for you. If you can't hear the program live, we have three venues where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world. My website is buckmastershow.com. TucsonSentinel.com carries the show, as does TucsonCitizen.com. Today, our Friday Focus interview with Dr. John Pettacone, Superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. TUSD is the second largest public school district in Arizona and one that has been immersed in controversy surrounding the Mexican-American Studies program. Joining me in studio to question Dr. Pettacone is Mari Herreras, staff writer for the Tucson Weekly, and we welcome you to join in the conversation. If you would like to question, make a comment, or if you have a concern for Dr. Pettacone, he would be more than happy to address any of those by calling 790-2040. You can also email us at bill@buckmastershow.com. Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. First of all, welcome to Mari. Good to have you with us here for the first time on our Friday Roundtable and Focus. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And Dr. Pettacone, good to see you again, coming back to our Friday Focus and the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to be here.
How does TUSD win back the community trust? During your state of the district, your second state of the district address last month, you said that the whole issue of Mexican-American studies has created a lot of tension in the community and it has fostered a level of mistrust. How do you build back that trust?
Well, I think the first thing that we've got to do is start having some true, honest conversations about what's happened and where we're going to go with trying to not only create a curriculum for coursework that represents the diversity of our community, but also, as we are attempting to do, develop a cultural change in the way in which teachers and staff members within the district have the competencies to be able to approach what have been called traditionally underserved populations. So we're implementing staff development to go back several years ago when we had a cultural a program that was designed to teach faculty how to teach Hispanic students, African-American students, and others. That effort was abandoned for a number of reasons. We are we're back into a process of reintroducing that and working with key individuals, researchers, and others to come up with a research-based approach to doing that. So, as you know, we're under a desegregation order. We're working with the special master under the same mantle, so we hope that we'll be able to achieve this.
And before I throw it over to Mari, one kind of quick follow-up about Mexican-American studies. And I want to talk a little bit about perceptions. I brought this up with the superintendent of public instruction, Dr. Hoopenthal, on the show yesterday. A couple of perceptions that kind of jump out at folks who don't live in Tucson or live in other areas throughout the country. One perception being, why would a district, a public school district, get rid of a Mexican-American studies program when nearly 40% of the population is Hispanic? The other is that why would a district ban certain books? Those are the two that are out there.
Well, the first thing is we were responding to a law that was put in place a year ago, and we made several appeals to that law as we went through the process. In the end, we did not prevail, and the advice that we got from counsel, there were only a couple of ways to go with an additional appeal, which is one of the questions. One was based on the evidence that had been presented, which we were guided to believe was fairly strong. And in fact, when you looked at the evidence in the record, it was. So the advice was not to move forward onto that track. So the only other alternative that we would have would be to appeal on the basis of constitutionality. The board made a decision that rather than jeopardize 15% of our basically 10% of our maintenance and operation budget that they would move forward with eliminating the program. As a part of that, we were told and, in fact, directed by the department after we were given very little instruction at the beginning to remove all materials, books, and anything that represented what happened in those courses. So we did that, and it wasn't about banning books. It was about removing the books and the materials from those classrooms that represented the curriculum that had been viewed as and deemed being uncompliant. So, in effect, there were a couple of boxes of books, actually, that were taken to a book depository, and the rest of the books were distributed to libraries, and that's the case as we stand, that the books are available for students in libraries across the district, and there are literally two boxes of books that are still in the Learner Center where we store all of our books.
Okay, here's Mari Herreras from the Tucson Weekly.
Do you look back, though, at what took place right after and wish that you guys had done this a bit differently because of how it's become a national issue?
Well, there really wasn't much choice. What happened is that I think, Mari, that brought it to a national issue was, as has been the case and it's been my perception since the time we've been dealing with this, there's so much misinformation that gets out for a lot of reasons, including when we were removing the books from the classrooms. There was one story, for example, of us moving into classrooms with students present and removing books as though we were kind of an in-your-face action, which was just terribly disrespectful. What happened was that in all cases except for one, the books were removed when students were not in classes. It was done. We had several meetings with principals to say be sensitive, go into those classes, talk to students. In one case, it was the end of the week when the books were to be removed. There was a department chairperson at one of our high schools, along with a Mexican-American studies teacher, by the way, that went into the classroom and removed a set of books from a shelf while kids were present. We found out about that and immediately went in and talked to the department head and said that was not a good idea. The principal apologized to students. And from that, a lot of story generation occurred. So we really tried to get out in front of the fact that it wasn't banning. We had arguments about what banning means, and it went from there. So that's really what's gone on throughout this debate.
Right. It seems like it's a question of semantics on how we also sure. look at what we mean by banning books and not having books available to teachers to teach in the classroom. And I think that's really where the heart of the argument is. And probably where a big heart of that was probably from Curtis Acosta, the Chicano literature teacher. And what I meant when I was asking you that, John, was, you know, how the decisions were made and how the information was sent out to all the different heads of the schools, it seemed that it was, that I imagine you may look back and wonder, well, maybe we should have had a different way of communicating to teachers, what they could teach, what they couldn't teach. I think the Tempest is probably a good example of that, just because how that was communicated in terms of being able to what kind of curriculum was going to be taught, what's not able to be taught.
Well, that's a good example, Mario. The Tempest was never one of the books that was mm-hmm. removed. And yet, again, I'm not gonna say that one teacher or anybody else right. attempted for any reasons to push forward information that wasn't accurate or wasn't exactly what we had said. But a lot of that went on, and there's so much emotion of this that people are understandably upset, both on either side of this issue. So The Tempest was never one of the books. I mean, it's a book that's still used in the same classes as they always were. It wasn't one of the ones removed from the classes that we're talking about, and it's used in classes throughout our district. So when that came forward, another bit of misinformation that spiraled out of control. So, yeah, you know, you can always look back and say, were there some other things we could have done? I'll argue that in any decision we make, we always look back and say, is there a better way? But in this case, we got together with every principal prior to the vote or the decision of noncompliance immediately afterwards to decide to talk about exactly how this should take place, the importance of getting together with students. We had the assistant superintendent as well as myself going into classes to try to talk to some of the students anyway to let them know that we have strong regard for them, and this is as a result of the law that had been implemented. And, you know, there's if everybody wishes to reach control of some kind and to reach consensus, you can usually get there. When there are parties that don't, you're in the midst of what turns out to be a situation that's very, very difficult to control. So, yeah, I'm disappointed. What's most of concern to me is the impact that this has on students. I think students in all cases when these things happen become the victims of this, and they come away with misperceptions. This is what they will define their experience in high school as a result of, and it's terrible. So the best that we can hope for now is to try to do what we can to try to mitigate some of that and make sure that students know we care about them. And we do that through our performance as well and through what we're able to create to address this in the future.
Classroom spending, just 50 cents approximately on every dollar of school spending went to instruction in the TUSD district in 2011, that ranking TUSD lowest among 10 districts across Arizona that are in similar sizes. What happened?
Well,
what's happened?
I can tell you there are a number of efficiencies we've got to look at, as should any organization. But if you look at that administrative line, and this is, again, I've said to you before, Bill, when I've gotten on this program and others, I'm not making excuses for anything that's going on in our district. But we've got to be realistic about what the actual situation is. And here's what it is. Mm-hmm. There was a nice article in the Arizona Daily Star, you may have seen it, by Brodesky, where he talked about the other district I used to be associated with. And they were also viewed as being inefficient for not putting as much classroom, you know, much dollars into the classroom and much more outside of the classroom. I thought it was a great explanation of some of the reasons why in that district it occurred. It's student and instructional services that are really the things that support the classroom that are considered administrative. And they would be everything from counseling to school nurses to learning support coordinators. And when you have a high population of minority students that might be English language learners, all of those things and exceptional education are outside of the classroom. In our case, in addition to that reality, we also have the number of schools in our district that we have to confront. We have approximately 100 schools, even after we closed 9 a couple of years ago, for a student population of 50,000. I can give you some comparative information about districts of like size. Mesa's the one that always comes up, and you know they have about 10,000 more students than we do and about 30 schools less. So if you have that many schools, it's as Yusuf Awad, who's our chief finance officer, made the point at a recent board meeting when we were explaining the budget, it's pretty hard, if not impossible, to be able to put the kinds of classroom dollars in the classroom that are necessary when you have the number of schools we have. We're supporting schools that are of 150, 200 students. It's pretty difficult to do.
John Petticone is with us, superintendent of the TUSD district, and we are going to take our break right here. Mari Hararis is with us from the Tucson Weekly. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Petticone. If you'd like to join in the conversation, 790-2040, 790-2040. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Everyone is switching to high-efficiency appliances because they have money, and a Culligan high-efficiency water softener does the same. But did you know that you can rent rather than buy? Think about it. No equipment to pay for upfront, money-saving purchase options if you change your mind, and service calls are included in the rental rate. In fact, you'll never have to pay for another water softener, ever. So now you can get all the benefits of soft water for less when you rent from Culligan. Imagine a spot-free home, softer skin, and brighter laundry for dollars a day. Even better, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy, plus helps all your appliances last longer. Let your Culligan man take care of your water when you rent the world's most efficient water softener. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry, working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Welcome back to Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. John Petticone, Dr. Petticone, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, TUSD, is with us. And Mari Hararis is with us from the Tucson Weekly. Mari, why don't you pick it up? We were talking about closing schools.
Yeah, just from the last thing Dr. Petticone said, that it seems that the next obvious, in terms of controlling classroom spending and dealing with these budget issues, is the next step will be to look at closing schools again. But perhaps with our history before, you know, with Roger Pfeiffer and how that happened, and the latest with you, how would you do that? How will we see that being done differently as opposed to what's been done in the past?
Well, the last administration actually closed 9 schools, as you know, and in hindsight, when you look at what happened with that, the process was pretty interesting. There were some mergers that took place, and I thought that the community involvement in that actually was pretty good. What we experienced a difficulty with in terms of disposition of property. And so I think if we've learned anything from that process, it should be that we have some idea of what's going to happen with any properties that might be subject to potential closure. The idea of merging and giving schools an opportunity to make those decisions with site councils does make sense. But what happened last spring when one of the schools in the district was up for potential closure, I think we learned a great deal from that. And at that point, I said to the governing board, and I mean this sincerely, we should not be coming every spring to our community and saying we're going to close individual schools. We make enemies out of the very people that we need to have engaged in the process. So what we have to do is look at a strategic approach to right-sizing our school district and make the decisions based on the best educational interests of our students. The criteria for doing that have to be carefully identified. For example, when you look at a school that may be performing very well but has 150 to 180 students in it, can you sustain that school in a unique way and still be able to be fiscally responsible? So hopefully the next approach, the next approach from my perspective, will be a strategic plan to look at school right-sizing and facilities, strategic facilities across the district, with an eye on what do we do if we do close schools and can we repurpose them for other benefits.
12:23 on the Buckmaster Show. I'm going to ask Dr. Petticone and Mari each to slip on their headsets here so we can now go to the Buckmaster Show live line. And we have Doug. He has a question about ethnic studies. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I heard Dr. Petticone answer the question about, that because of the legislature passing the law, they had to respond and get rid of the Mexican-American studies. But my question is, with all the work that civil rights leaders did to try to get to desegregation, where people could get into the mainstream and have an opportunity. Why would we have a program that doesn't mainstream kids, but that actually encourages segregation?
Okay, Doug, thank you. Here's Dr. Pettacone.
Yeah, thanks for the question. First of all, if I went back after this began to take a look at when the program was first introduced, which was 1996, and it was at that time called Hispanic Studies, the way it was framed when the governing board at that time approved it was Hispanic Studies, a course of studies designed to teach students the contributions made by Hispanic citizens to the history of our country. Now, that's a course of studies that most people would agree would be valuable. And the reason, by the way, that they even considered this was because of the lack of success that we had with a growing population in our district, and that was Latino and Latina students. And so I think from its inception, it was designed to do something positive. What happened over time was that it developed into something different, and it was that difference that got the eye of the legislature as a result of then State Superintendent Tom Horn. And then legislation was actually drafted, as you know, to eliminate the program in its current state. So that's the reason it was designed. It was really designed under a desegregation order to try to address the needs of an important population in our district. And so it made some sense under those conditions.
Mari Hararis, another question.
I was at a press conference yesterday for the Mexican-American Studies Community Advisory Board. And one of the things that they are really concerned with is that they don't feel that there's really much communication going on right now in terms of really what's the future. There's the departments, the ethnic studies departments supposedly are changing to service departments. The future of the program director, Sean Arce, and his job placement. And exactly what's going to happen? How will things look like? And also, why is that not being communicated to these people who were kind of part of that 1996 movement to create these classes?
Well, and we've opened up for those lines of communication. I've got to tell you, it's very, very difficult and it's very, very strained. And so we're always willing and open, and in fact, we are very interested in talking to the Mexican American Studies Advisory, but the program will be different, and the difference will be that it will mirror in effect the other programs that we have in the district to support student services, which means intervention, and it means engagement with students when they're having difficulty, and the kinds of activities that should be going on with all of our students. And so that's going to take place across all of our what previously considered or termed ethnic studies department. That name was actually considered for change about a year ago to be Multicultural Student Services Department, which is the department under which these courses fall or these programs fall, and that each of them will be called Native American Student Services, which is what they should be doing. And the same thing should be true of the Mexican American Student Services Department. So that's going to take place. In terms of a curriculum that's designed to address exactly what this course of studies did, we're going to be working with the university's other experts to try to put together that kind of a curriculum. So it will be different and it will look different. But we're more than interested and willing to discuss this with anyone, and especially the members of the Mexican American Studies.
How's enrollment looking for TUSD?
Well, as is the case in just about every district in the Valley and across Arizona, we're losing enrollment. We're losing enrollment for a number of different reasons. Interestingly, we mirror just about 10,000 students less than the other district to the north of us, you know, Mesa. And so when they're at 60,000, we're at 50,000. So we lost, as we had predicted, about 2,000 students again this year. And we're hoping that we can level that off. And then, in fact, if we're able to do some things to encourage citizens to consider their children being educated back in Tucson Unified, perhaps begin to go in the other direction. And full-day kindergarten was one of the reasons we did that, as well as some of the marketing strategies and really the service orientation, customer service orientation we're implementing. People want to see students achieve. So I'm banking on what's going to happen in another month and then the results that will be coming forward by before the end of the semester, that our students will achieve better. And you're going to see some of that achievement show up in schools going from being labeled D schools to being labeled C or better. There's a serious attitude on the part of our principals and teachers about turning that around. So, yeah, we lost the number of students this year, as we have every year, and that we have to stop that bleeding.
Mari, we've only got about a few seconds left. Do you have a yes or no question for the superintendent?
No, I don't know. I don't think I ever have a yes or no question for Dr. Pettacone.
Are you you had mentioned you were a little bit frustrated in your state of the district speech, a couple of steps forward, five steps back, I think you said. How's your frustration level right now?
It's about the same, you know, and it will quickly dissipate when we show performance. You know, that's the bottom line.
And you think there will be some performance in these test results, which should be coming out here in the spring.
I really do. Schools are looking at students differently, and they're looking at data to try to inform some of those decisions. So I have great hope, yes.
Dr. John Pettacone, thank you very much for being on our Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks,
Dr. Pettacone with us on our Friday Focus. Dylan Smith is waiting in the wings. He's the publisher and editor of TucsonSentinel.com. He joins Mari Hararis as we talk on the Reporters Roundtable next. News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. A spokesman says President Obama and Afghan President Karzai are very much on the same page about the overall plan to hand over responsibility for the fighting in Afghanistan to Afghan forces. U.S. officials say the administration is getting ready to approve the release of at least part of a $1.5 billion aid package for Egypt. The fire chief in Dexter, Michigan, says officials are confident that no one is missing in the aftermath of the tornado that left more than 100 homes shattered. New York police say a college employee inadvertently photographed himself planting a motion-activated camera in a women's locker room at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Wall Street, the Dow is down 6 points. The NASDAQ is off 3. More details at srnnews.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world, for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
.12:33 on the Buckmaster Show, and welcome back to our program on KVOI AM 1030 and the Voice Network over Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Each Friday afternoon, we present the Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists who sound off on the week's top stories. This week, Dylan Smith is with us, publisher and editor of the Tucson-based online news service, TucsonSentinel.com, a place that we are happy to say carries the Buckmaster Show. So if you're not listening to the show live, you can find it at TucsonSentinel.com.
Exactly.
And we are very
happy. We stream your show, too. We link to that as well. So
hey, another source. We're trying to make it.
If your radio's not working, you can find it there.
We are trying to make it very user-friendly. And Mari Herreras, the staff writer, one of the staff writers for the Tucson Weekly, joins us. And we thank her for joining me in the John Pettacone interview with Dr. Pettacone, TUSD superintendent. And we welcome you to join in the conversation. If there is anything that you hear that perhaps you want a question, don't agree with, if you have a comment, we would love to take that at 790-2040. The Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Mari, I want to pick up a little bit just on the TUSD, our interview with Dr. Pettacone. TUSD just has so many PR problems. It's like, where do you begin? Even before this whole controversy with the MAS and Mexican American Studies, it seemed like there was one thing after another that TUSD had a public relations problem with.
You know, it's true. I know that some folks have talked about maybe one of the things that we could do to help that along, maybe to break up the district. Is it a district that, you know, we've heard Dr. Pettacone here talk about comparing it to Mesa, and this is a district that deals with large schools and large populations effectively. But then I there's also just this attitude that TUSD is kind of a mirror of Tucson. It's spread out and it's just all over the place. And maybe that's one of the things that people suggested would be easier to get a handle on the problems.
Well, breaking it up, you end up with the overhead problem. And right. In any school district, you're going to have to pay the superintendent and all the other
administrators
X amount of dollars. If you have four more districts, that's four times the price right there. I mean, look at all the other small districts around Tucson, and their superintendents get paid a rather hefty salary, even though they're much smaller than TUSD. You also end up with the problem of just trying to What sort of oversight is there if you have, you know, say four more districts? It's that much more difficult for reporters to pay attention to what's going on, and stuff slips under the radar.
Mari, how does the district get beyond the very bitter feelings that have divided the Hispanic community over this Mexican American studies? And it continues on in the league of the courts of legal opinion and plus the court of public opinion.
I don't know, some of my friends and I have joked that maybe it'll take copious amounts of copal to burn in the lobby of the 1010 building. But that aside, I think it really takes direct communication. I mean, there was lots of frustration aired at the press conference yesterday that there's just so much going on and no one is really talking to people. And the fact is that this community group that's been involved in these classes from its inception, they're kind of being ignored and pushed out. I mean, there's a real feeling that that's what's happening. And so the fact that they're not being involved in really what the future is of what these classes will look like, the fact that people at the UVA, I've tried to get folks to talk to me, no one at the UVA will confirm the Department of Education that they're actually involved in doing any kind of work with TUSD on a multicultural curriculum. Although I know that there's been maybe early discussion of that, but no one will talk about it now. Hmm. So I think there just needs to be that PR cleanup, in a sense. It needs to be real, honest communication. And on the other side of it, I think that the district needs to sit down and with their PR person and do some real thoughtful strategy and planning that does have some heart and merit to it in terms of dealing with the community. And right now it doesn't.
And then we have the recall of one of the board members, Dylan. That ought to be very interesting.
That's a tough hill to climb, I think.
It is.
Getting
a
that
lot
many
of signatures.
26,000 something?
I think, to be safe, 25.
Huge.
I don't know if that's likely, to be honest. That seems like an awful lot of signatures. The number of people who are passionately concerned about this on both sides are, you know, it's a fairly small group of people who are both, you know, very much in favor of the MAS classes and very much against them. The vast majority of people in the middle you know,
just want better schools.
Yeah, exactly. They have broader concerns than this program that affects some 1,500 kids, and trying to get them to jump up and down about this. I mean, you can't even get people to turn out to vote for school board elections in the first place.
All right, let's move on beyond now to USD, but we do thank Dr. Petticone for spending a few minutes with us at the top of the program talking about what he sees, how TUSD goes forward here. Well, we have early voting. It's hard to believe. It begins very soon in the special CD8 election.
Next Thursday, I believe.
It's unbelievable. It's a very, we've been told, you know, it's a very compressed period of time. We've had some debates. There'll be some more. This radio station, KVOI, will be doing a live debate. I believe that one will be 1 week from Monday here on KVOI from 7 to 9. The Buckmaster Show next Thursday, we're going to have all four, re-air all four of our interviews with the GOP candidates. And Mari, you covered, I think there were two back-to-back, right? Weren't there?
Yeah, one in Saddlebrook on Wednesday and last night, Sabino Teenage Republican Club at Sabino High School.
Okay, so what's the tone? Reading the media reports, it indicates that pretty much cordial among the four.
Yeah, you know, I think candidates. We were hoping – I was hoping for some sparks yesterday, I mean, because the Saddlebrook one was a bit of a snoozer. But not much in terms of any
and people
real jostling.
Kind of indicated because – well, they thought that Frank Antonari and Kelly, that there would be sparks flying between those two. And so
there's not a whole lot of difference being shown between the candidates. They're all sort of hewing to the same line. And, you know, you would think coming out of the gate, everybody thought that Dave Sitton would be sort of the, you know, establishment country club candidate. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, come out with a lot more conservative positions than you would have thought he may have.
So
you
true.
Know, they all sound like they're reading from the same script, essentially. And, you know, you can't really call these things debates. They're just sort of, you know, people. They might as well just trade notes at the beginning of the thing.
Well, I thought the Saddlebrook one was funny because they were honest in the sense that they called it a panel discussion.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, maybe that would be is more appropriate.
Fitting. Right.
Yeah. So that with that in mind, and with not a lot of fiery debate going on, it is going to come down to name recognition, right?
I mean, that's going to factor into it, but yeah. They all have a certain level of name recognition. I think McSally may be, you know, a bit farther down, but when she declared she got a good deal of press, I think people, you know, she sort of popped
up
on people's
national,
radar.
Yeah. A lot of national press.
You know, Kelly, people, you know, a lot of Republicans voted for the man last time around, so he's got that level of engagement. Sitting, people know because he's been on TV and radio for decades. And a certain number of people have either voted for Antonori for the legislature before or recognize him because he gets himself in the news frequently.
I think that the big issue here is going to be the early voting. And so they've got to get out there. They got to get that. And I don't think that they've had enough time to really do that. And that's going to be an issue. But who's has that name recognition that's in the run is Jesse Kelly. And I think that's why he's stood out from from the rest in the beginning.
And there hasn't really been any polling other than a poll that Kelly came out with early on in the process that I believe showed him up by 20, 25 points. And so far, I haven't seen any polling. Have either of you? No.
That poll was so very, very early that, you know, I don't think it has much bearing now. Although, one thing we should note for people who want to vote in this, the voter registration deadline is Monday. If you want to vote in the GOP primary, you know, if you're a Republican and you've moved or, you know, whatever, make sure you're registered if you want to be able to cast your ballot.
And whoever emerges will obviously have, I believe, the inside track for the fall election. And all four candidates have indicated they're going to run again in the fall. So folks are spending a lot of money on these two campaigns.
Winning this primary will certainly raise the profile for somebody who wants to run again. If the Republican gets defeated by Ron Barber, I don't know if that's a plus in the fall, or, you know, does that name recognition outweigh, you know, a potential loss
and
coming immediately off
right.
of one?
And political analysts, I believe Professor Volge, the former Tucson mayor, Tom Volge, has said that Ron Barber really is the favorite to emerge from this because of all the goodwill created that he has been involved with around the Giffords office. So
I think it's interesting during the debates or panel discussions that that comes up in the sense that, you know, I think I've Martha McSally's characterizes as a special election for special people at a special time. No joke. And
there are many ways to interpret that.
And how do you do that? How do you do this campaign right now for these 6 months, for just the 6 months, and try and be civil and be kind and mm-hmm. when we're it's an interesting it will certainly be interesting to see when it finally does come to two candidate time period. I'll be looking forward to that.
And it's still an open question whether Ron Barba will run again in the fall, and who else is going to be in that race. You know, you've got three other Democrats who have declared for
Matt
the fall,
Hines,
and the potential of
Matt
Dan
Hines,
Walden
Paula,
jumping in.
Paula Abboud, and of course Steve Farley. You have three candidates who I believe I have nothing to base this on, but I think they believe that Ron Barber will not run in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's going on here. But if he were to decide – I know we're throwing a lot of ifs around here.
Well,
but
it's all iffy.
If he were to decide, if he became the congressperson and he were to decide, well, maybe I will run, you wonder if the Democrats then would – the other Democrats would step aside that I mentioned.
Well, they've – that's such an open question that they haven't really said whether they will or won't.
I know.
And, you know,
we're
you've got the likelihood that Nan Walden's going to step up and run in the fall race, not in the special election race, but for the fall for the new congressional district. And she's going to bring a lot of money. She's got a lot of money herself and a lot of Washington connections, and that'll completely change the dynamics of that Democratic primary.
Dylan Smith is with us. He's the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, and Mari Herreras, one of the Tucson Weekly staff writers. We haven't talked about Rio Nuevo. We had Ms. Bain on the program, Jody Bain, the board chairwoman, and Rick Grinnell were with us on Monday, and they were talking, saying, watch out, Bill, we've got an audit coming out the next day, and this is a forensic audit that was released, but I think I am not alone, Mari, in saying I'm unclear what the ramifications of this audit are all about.
Yeah, I am as well. I'm still scratching my head over this one. I think that part of it for me, I think, is just I think that the troubles that the Rio Nuevo board itself has had in communicating what its purpose is and why, you know, what's driving the train right now. And so we have this audit, and what does happen next? And I think that would be my question too. I'm not sure what
if we're confused, then we try to follow these things on a professional basis, on a daily basis. What do the rest of the folks who are not perhaps just casual consumers of the news, they must really be confused?
Well, one of the main problems in trying to suss out what's been going on for about the past 6 months is the fact that the Rio Nuevo board and the city of Tucson have been negotiating behind closed doors, and the board members refuse to let those, you know, talks be open to the public. It's all closed door, behind the scenes stuff. So what they're actually talking about, nobody really knows. We know that, you know, lawyers are getting paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of bucks over the past couple of years, and that's the only money that's been spent on Rio Nuevo lately.
Yeah, gone from consultants to lawyers.
Exactly.
And Jody Bain, who is an attorney herself, indicated here on the program that, well, you know, she's very careful and wants to make sure every the dots are all there and everything's lined up. And I think that might be part of what's going on here. You have an attorney who's really careful about the way this is coming forwards. But I don't know where this is going to be resolved or how it's going to be resolved.
Well, I don't – you know, ultimately there probably is no resolution for the things that have been done in the past. You know, it's the common phrase around town is that, you know, we spent some $230 million on nothing. And, you know, that's not quite true. There was a lot of work that was done downtown, a lot of infrastructure work that was done. There were, you know, projects that were actually completed that in the long run are probably going to help. But, you know, we did spend a whole lot of money on consultants and architects for projects that never went anywhere. I mean, how much did we spend on the UA Science Center planning for whatever they were trying to do, some elevator to the moon or something?
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah. And the remaining minute, just kind of a Daniel Patterson update. The House Ethics Committee voted unanimously on Tuesday to hire an independent counsel to investigate the charges against Representative Patterson, who has said he will not resign. And I guess there is another court hearing scheduled for the end of April. So on and on it goes.
Yeah, The more it lingers and the more that comes out, it really is it's a crazy-making situation. I think, though, that I'm not sure if Patterson has done himself any good by the way he's attacked his ex-girlfriend and the media on Twitter. Any form of communication is available now to us.
All right. Mari Herreras, thank you very much. And Dylan Smith, thanks a lot.
Thank you,
sir.
Have
a happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Happy anniversary.
I'll do my damnedest.
All right. 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us. Weekend Watch is coming up next.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit PyramidFCU.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
And that music always signals Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. We're twisting and shouting out by the pool. And I got to tell you, of course, St. Patrick's Day is tomorrow. It was not a pretty sight today up at Russell Public Communications when the owner, the award-winning owner of this fine company, and it's a dignified company, some really major clients here in Tucson and across the country, but when he got out of his car and walked into Russell Communication in a emerald green velour jumpsuit with the Guinness symbol on it, that was really, really kind of not a pretty sight to kick this St. Patrick's Day weekend off. Some of the employees were seen scurrying for some of the exits.
You know, Guinness isn't just for breakfast anymore, Bill Buckmaster. We celebrate the nectar of the gods, all day on St. Patrick's Eve as well as St. Patrick's Day. Absolutely.
We got a big parade, don't we, tomorrow?
We do. Saturday morning, tomorrow at 10, is when the festivities begin at El Presidio Park downtown. There's going to be live Irish music, dancing, entertainment, all the stuff you love, Bill. And,
oh, yeah,
of course, some delicious food that my fellow culinary cruisers in the community are just going to love. Now, that annual parade follows at about 11 o'clock, which will start at the corner of Pennington and Stone and kind of wrap around the Presidio and make its way back. Tomorrow is a great way to kick off the celebration downtown. It's going to be great for the whole family.
Yeah, I'll tell you, and being half Irish, my mother was a first-generation Irish-American. Believe me, I am very much into St. Patrick's Day. What about if I'm looking for kind of a St. Patrick's Day, really authentic Irish pub environment?
Yeah, the best thing to do. There's so many in town, it's tough to pick, but my pick for that is Pastiche Modern Eatery, right there on North Campbell, because for one day a year only, they transform into Paddy's Irish Pub. And host Pat Connors is going to lay out an Irish menu from appetizers to desserts, including bangers and mash and that beautiful Irish soda bread that you, Bill, love so much.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love that soda bread.
Classic corned beef and cabbage. And get this, whiskey, Irish whiskey pie, and a Guinness stout cake.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
That's available all day and all night tomorrow at Pastiche on Campbell Avenue.
This sounds like it is a don't eat Matt Russell fast for the next 12 to 24 hours. So he surely will be going in the green velour jumpsuit with an empty tank.
I think I've gained 2 pounds just since this segment started.
Oh, man, give me some of that soda bread, put some nice real butter on it, and then drench it in honey, and you've got yourself some really, really nice Irish soda bread to go with that dinner. How about, is there anything going on as far as there's a Dublander pub here in town?
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the closest you can get to Dublin without leaving town. It's the annual St. Patrick's Day bash at the Old Dubliner on University Boulevard, right there in the heart of Main Gate Square. The party moved from the restaurant to the streets, and you're going to get great music and great Irish drink specials, delicious Irish cuisine, all in this classic setting that makes you think you're right there in Ireland. And I hear, Bill, that candidate for Congress Dave Sitton himself is going to be swinging by at about 2:30 to meet with some friends and supporters. So get in on all the action tomorrow at the Old Dubliner in Main Gate Square.
I wonder if Dave will break out the green tie.
Knowing Dave and his passion for vibrant ties, I think you've hit it right on.
Give him my regards, will you?
We'll do so indeed, Bill.
Have yourself a wonderful St. Patrick's Day weekend, Matt Russell. Thanks.
I can't wait. You
all
do
right.
The same.
Bye-bye. Support for the Buckmaster Show on Friday comes in part from Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. The Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger and Associate Certified Public Accountants on the web at FlowersRieger.com. Michael C. Flowers runs a great organization over at 2919 East Broadway. He's my CPA and the CPA of the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, on behalf of our team. Our producer, Rosemary Brandt. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe St. Patrick's Day weekend. We'll be back with you Monday at noon here on the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Have a great weekend.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.